Dear Shooter, the hills are alive with the sound of lead in the air. That's right. Another year and another successful event for the Vet Healing Adventures. But as is always the case, there were lessons learned that may help you in the field this fall. Don't worry. We're here to screw it up so you don't have to.
But they did state that when these guns are put together with different pieces or whatever, it's like an organ transplant.
Now, I got an F in shooting once.
It's a perishable skill.
Quitting?
Yes. My favorite death threat I ever got, the guy left his email address on.
He's just going to make it rain in Spanish, that's all.
Here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents, here's 20 cents. Wow, you just made
that clip on, it's not a strap on.
2 weeks for all that, that isn't training, that's camp.
You couldn't read a brochure on all that shit in that time.
Prepare to enter the space where nothing is safe, nothing is sacred, and offensive conversation is encouraged. Welcome to the Deer Shooter Podcast and your hosts, Jason Wilson, Brandy, and Jason Croteau.
All right, happy Thursday. And I hesitate to kind of brag about this, but this is fourth year for Vet Healing Adventures, and we maintain on the antelope hunt a 100% success rate.
That is absolutely correct. I think it's a combination of we have local guides, we have patient hunters, and that community pulls together. If you're having a hard time finding one, one of the ranchers is like, hey, go to my pasture.
Yep.
Right? They take care of you.
Well, I'd like to reiterate the antelope event, as the elk can be a little sketch. And this year, the tags we had in the elk season is that area is on fire.
Yeah, it burnt pretty bad. So I think the elk are going to be tricky in that this year.
Well, if it was anything like the antelope hunt, because I talked to several of the guides and several of the hunters, and I know at least from my own experience this year, this is the hardest I've ever had to work for a goat.
Now, are you just being picky, or you just didn't run into them?
Well, it was just not running into them. I mean, and it was weird because it started out so, and it was kind of funny. My hunters came in late on Friday, so they missed sight in, and then they went to the wrong location.
Yeah, they missed their bedroom.
So they ended up in the bunk beds in my camper.
And I want to let y'all know that my bunk beds, it's just me and Jason, so my bunk beds are a pantry, so I am at midnight throwing shit everywhere to give them a place to sleep. You had to wade through the camper.
Yeah. But it added to their adventure, because they had, and it was kind of funny because I found out later that they had never stayed in a camper before, so Brandy was having to give the tutorial of like how the toilet worked.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they were all like, the next morning, they're like, so is there a shower in here? And I'm like, yes, there is. But let me tell you about the shower. There's two of you, and the hot water heater has 6 gallons. So use it wisely.
You got to be quicker. You got to share.
There's no sharing in that thing. It's like showering inside of a flagpole.
They would have to spoon. Anybody could spoon in the shower, right?
No.
Yeah, that might have been tricky.
So my the other guy, you know, Jaden was helping us out, and he and I got rolling about 5:30 and hauled butt. I don't know, the fire hall is about 50 minutes from the house, so it's not horrible, but we got there just as the light was starting to come up, creep up, and managed to even get, you know, a pancake and a sausage.
So you made it for breakfast.
Made it for breakfast. Finally met our hunters in person.
That's funny.
Ran them up to the sight-in range real quick, got them all sighted in, and then we all piled into the back of my truck. And of course, Jaden and I, and most of the guides do this anything anyway. I think most of the guides will take their own rifle in case the hunter decides, I don't know about mine.
It's a good plan.
So we had ours in the back seat, and they climbed into the back seat and saw our rifles strapped to the back and went, ooh.
you do obviously run around with some pretty nice firearms.
Well, yeah, and being suppressed too. I think that was kind of an appeal for them.
Sure, it's an appeal for everybody.
Now I did. Now, and of course, we said in the intro, like, we screw it up, so you don't have to, right? And this is something that I'm gonna take into next year, is make sure that when I'm talking to my hunter about ammo, and I went back and I looked at the text, and I did say, you know, make sure it's hunting ammo, but you know, we showed up with Full Metal Jacket, and you can't really hunt with that.
Well, you can, but it's not necessarily as effective as it should be.
Well, it doesn't expand.
That's right.
So you're rolling the dice on that one.
Fair. All right, so start from the beginning. Tell your story, because I had a very unique story as well.
Well, I tell you, you start, because I ended up with two of them.
Okay, fair enough. It was almost like I had two of them. I got a guy that he brought his son, and 12, 13 years old, slightly on the spectrum, but very functional. And the driest sense of humor I've ever seen on a young person, ever.
I you know, my little brother's autistic.
Yeah.
Same thing, dry sense of humor. And I think it's hysterical, but...
Yeah, sometimes they don't know they're being funny.
Right.
Funny. We leave the fire hall after just a good hearty breakfast and motor down the road. And I headed out into Frenchy Draw, out, you know, southeast of where the fire hall is. And took a pretty good dirt road, something that's maintained by the oil field. And the first corner we come to has a windmill on it. And this windmill feeds a stock tank.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got water.
Yep.
Well, right around it is a herd of antelope. It's got one buck in it and about 35, 40 does.
Oh, he was a big buck then.
Well, he was decent. You know, he was, you know, it wasn't record book anything, but he was darn respectable.
He was tough.
And we stopped and looked at him. And, I mean, we've been hunting for 7 minutes at this point.
Yeah.
And so I was like, guys, I think we can do better. So I drove away from those, and we got all the way into Frenchy Draw, and over every hill and every little bitty turn down there, there was another small group of antelope. So I showed them another 100 shootable bucks. I mean, they weren't fancy or record book or anything like that. I showed them one freak where the horns, one side was perfectly formed and the other side was just bent. It was just wrong.
I should have asked you about that, because we were looking for one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I can probably drive you right to him, because they aren't going very far from water right now.
No.
We've been dry. And so you find water, you're going to find a group. You just got to, you know, be picky. And we look and from the back of the seat, the kid says, you know, the odd antelope we saw first thing this morning, I'm going to name him Steve. We kind of had a good chuckle about that, and then we looked at a couple more goats, and the, you know, the dad's getting kind of anxious. He wants to get out, and he wants to go and do. And I was like, "Well, we got to find one worth."
Well, this was like what, 9:30 in the morning?
Yeah,
because I mean,
way early.
Yeah,
and I'd stocked the truck. I was ready to go all day. We had lunches, the whole thing. And then from the back seat, we're in about an hour, hour and 20 minutes into the hunt. And we hear, can we just go back and shoot Steve? We had a good laugh about that. And Dad goes, yeah, let's go shoot Steve. So we turn around, and I had no idea if Steve was going to still be in the same area or not, because they move.
Right.
You know, they don't stay around. Well, sure enough, they had bedded down right there by the water hole next to the windmill. They had gone absolutely nowhere. However,
you are very lucky, because any child on the spectrum knows every detail of that animal. And if you didn't find Steve.
Oh, I know. I knew I was in trouble. He named it. I mean, like, we had to find that antelope. And if you've ever been around boys like that or folks on the spectrum,
yeah. Oh.
The details matter. And so you couldn't make a change at this point. You had to find that exact one. I got shithouse lucky. We found the exact one again, staying out the same spot. However, it's 500 yards of flat nothingness around the water hole. And I understand why they're staying there. They've got water, and they can see for a metric forever. And so we parked the truck by a wellhead that covered it a little, got out and walked and used, there's a string of posts that show where a gas line's buried. And we used that to break up our approach. Well, the last post is 300 yards away. And on sighting day, my guy didn't do stellar. He was not the marksman that I was hoping for. He was zeroed at 100 with a 243, so I knew we had to have shot placement.
Right.
And so we sat down, put him on a tripod, got him stable. We had to get the jitters out because he was excited, very excited. And I talked him through a ballistic solution of, you know, you pick the crosshairs on the back of this animal, and when his head's down, you can take a shot because he's not going to move. He's feeding.
Right.
Right? If his head comes up, if he's prone to you, it's fine. But if he starts to turn his head, he's going to move. So animal behavior started to come into play.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then the boy from the back says, very, very loud, do you think you'll see us? And about that time, Steve looks right at us.
Yep.
5-6 does stand up. They look right at us. And I just tell him, well, now's your chance. Because we had 2 minutes before he was going to spool those girls
two
up.
2 minutes.
And leave. And more heads stopped standing up and looking at us. There's two, and then there's five, and then there's 12, and then there's 20. There's lots of eyeballs going, hey, that ain't right. That post is not right anymore. He squeezes off the shot and airballs right over the top of Steve.
Oof.
And I was like, did you put the crosshairs on the back? He goes, I second-guessed it. I gave it a little bit. I said, don't do that. Squeeze again. So he racks another one in and connects, and one of the most beautiful vital shots on an antelope I've been witness to. Steve got drunk and fell over, and we had him. And we were announced as kings of the prairie because we now have a antelope from Colby. Colby was the boy. Walked up on it, and oh gosh, I mean, it was the encyclopedia of, did you know about the Sonoran antelope? Did you know about the Western antelope and the American antelope? And he had studied for 2 days in a car everything there was to know about antelope. Did you know that that horn's not really antler? It's a horn. It's a matted hair. I mean, he had it all.
That's awesome.
It was fantastic. So I think the trip was more for him than it was for Jeremiah, my hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was, because I was told by your hunter, because I handled the logistics. I talked to him a lot, and he told me that for his birthday, he wanted to go on the antelope hunt. Okay. That was a birthday
thing. So it was a birthday
thing.
Present. Well, and they drove down from Washington, and they hit the dinosaur museum, and they came on the hunt. And
oh, yeah.
They're going to go back through a portion of the park when it goes out through Cody's. I mean, it's a trip. It's a bona fide trip.
That's awesome.
But having your antelope named and that pressure being put on you as a guide, I'll tell you, there's a little nerve going on that you have got to go get Steve. It was a great trip.
Well, let me back you up just a minute. Because this is going to kind of come into play with my hunters. Your hunter had a 243, which for antelope is, I think, perfect.
Quite possibly the ideal cartridge.
Now, but ammo comes into play. What grain bullet was he using? Or I guess, what bullet was he using?
He was throwing an 85 Barnes that was loaded by, I think, Remington and the Fusion.
Okay.
So it was an 85 grain Barnes.
Okay.
Solid copper, made to hunt with, expands. Right. Yeah.
My choice would have probably been a little heavier, 100 grain. But
he bought what was on the shelf, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. But yeah, no, I think 243 is absolutely a stellar round for antelope.
Mm-hmm.
My hunters went a little on the heavy side, but we were at the sight-in range on Friday, and I remember walking up to it, and I saw a 300 Wind Mag shell.
Yeah.
Sitting on the bench, and I grabbed a hold of it, and I turned around, and there were some hunters still milling about, and I said, who's shooting the 300 Wind Mag? And one of the guys raises his hands, and he goes, that's me. And I looked at him, and I, what did that antelope ever do to you?
Well, he just didn't want to have to process when he was done. It was going to come out burger at the end.
Well, you know, a near miss might knock him off his feet, so...
He wanted to make sure the job got done.
Yeah, I would tell you, overkill is underrated.
Well, yes and no.
I mean, there comes a point where overkill is just overkill. And we experienced that. So my two guys, they came up from Ogden. They're best friends, have been since their time in the service. And they came up, and you talk about pressure as a guide. So my hunter tells me that he's been trying to deer hunt for like 4 years. He's been on four or five deer hunts and never even seen one. So he's like, he goes, yeah, this is it, man. He's like, if I don't get one on this one, I'm selling my rifle, I'm selling my gear, and I'm just giving it up. So now I'm going, oh.
All my shit's for sale, and I'm going to go fishing.
No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. So, you know, we get them all sighted in and stuff. And then then the decision's made that, you know, we have the cooler shit. So they're going to use Jaden's gun, which is a 7 PRC. I'm running an .6. Both of us are running 175 grain bullets. He's doing a ELDX, and I'm running a terminal ascent.
You were all overgunned.
Oh, by a lot. But those are our hunting guns. So.
Well, you weren't getting taken over by a coyote or a mountain lion.
No,
by any means.
We weren't. So we, you know, Jade and I kind of went, well, let's go with the 7 PRC because it's a little smaller diameter. Maybe it won't quite do as much damage. Of course, we didn't take into account velocities. But we took off, and I had intended to go where you were at in Frenchy Draw. That was my plan. And as we're driving down towards the highway to get, you know, because you take the highway 8 or 10 miles before you hit Frenchy Draw. And before we get to the highway, we're probably 2 miles off the highway. We see a toad. And Jaden and I slammed on the brakes, and Jaden's going, that's the one right there. And I looked, and I recognized it as one I had seen a couple days before. And he was big. And we went, all right, let's go after him. And get off the road, and he's about 290 yards. Problem was, my hunters, they didn't want to take a shot that wasn't prone. And I guess I my mistake was not explaining, look, you've got about 5 seconds to get this done. Because as soon as we would stop and they'd get set up, the antelope would move. And this guy would not let us get within 1,000 yards.
Well, he's big for a reason.
Yeah, exactly. But as we're chasing him, he starts rounding up does. And as he does this, we have five others, big bucks, to come in, two of which were bigger than him.
All right.
So we spent probably 4 hours in this 2 mile stretch trying to get on one of these guys, and they wouldn't let us do it.
What the?
Oh, man. They would.
You have opposable thumbs and a way overkill rifle.
All right. Well, if I'm being honest, there was a couple of times, had I had the shot, I would have taken it.
It's not your hunt.
It's not my hunt. And watching what my guys did at the bench and knowing that they're not experienced, and I wasn't going to let them take a 700-yard shot.
No, that's a little long for a rookie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little long.
You know, I was trying to get us inside of like 350, and these antelope were just not having it.
Wow.
They were on to us from the word go. Which made me crazy because 2 days earlier, I saw two of them running each other off, and I pulled over on the side of the road, and they were just duking it out like 90 yards from me. Didn't care that I was even there.
Well, that's because they do get a memo. It's opening season, and they do their
thing.
Yeah,
they've got a calendar.
They do.
Smart watchers.
They do. And I thought maybe I'd get away with it because I drive a white pickup, and they're used to seeing that because it's all gas fields. And that's what all the oil field and the gas field guys drive. Apparently not.
You couldn't use terrain to get around on them. You couldn't do any of that.
There
stuff.
Was no terrain.
That is, we do hunt the surface of the moon.
I mean, we got down, and we were close to the highway. We were less than a mile from the highway.
and
there, I know where you were at. Yeah, that is flat.
Yeah. Well, and there's a few hills, and there's a power line road that's kind of up and down the hills, and we were trying to kind of maneuver and sneak around through there, but no, they had us pegged.
They're big for a reason.
And that was, you know, we'd been on these goats for 2 hours at this point. That's about time we saw you driving back to the to the fire hall, and we went, well, we're behind.
Yeah, we had Steve.
Well, I looked because we were up on top of the hill, and I looked down on your truck, and I went, yep, there's legs in the back. Yep. They're done.
We were actually first back to the cooler. It was kind of unnerving because good goat, first back to the cooler. What's everybody else doing?
Yeah, what do you do now?
Well, right? Yeah, what are you going to do?
And I took a nap. Yeah, and I always want to give my hunters a hunt.
Right.
You know, especially these guys, because they've never done it before. Like, I mean, you know, my guy, he'd been on some deer hunts, never even seen an animal. So at least, I mean, first thing in the morning, we were leaving the range, and we saw a buck sitting on a chunk of state that we'd have to shoot over private to get him, which I don't think anybody would have cared where he was.
So let me add fuel to your fire for next year. In Area 75, where we're at, surrounding Lysite, if you're at a chunk of private, the landowners don't care because they donated a tag for you to be there.
Well, I know, but we avoided a couple because they were on private. Even though I knew who the landowner was and I knew they probably wouldn't care, I wasn't going to be that guy.
Well, when you're running a Vet Healing Adventures hunt, those chains are lifted off of you, so remember that.
Well, that's good to know for next year.
Depends on the landowner.
Mm. Well, there's nobody out there that would say a thing.
No, and the one that we saw about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that was, I mean, I really seriously thought about taking him. I knew who the landowner was. I knew it wasn't going to be an issue, but it was still I don't want to be that guy.
All right. I respect the ethics. Just know that everybody out there is on board.
Well, I'll remember that for next year.
Yep.
But, and we'd already gotten permission from one of the landowners, like directly. He went, go to my place. But that's down the road here a minute. So we haven't even gotten the first antelope at this point. So we finally, after like 4 hours of dicking around with these 6 bucks that wouldn't give us the time of day, we are fine. So we drive all the way to the border of the area, the eastern border.
All right.
Yep. And we're like, all right, we'll go up there, we'll get on the main roads, and we'll come back. I'm pretty sure it was the same road you were on, that Badwater Road, that connects all the way through. And we figured we'd get to the far east side, and we just work our way back on that road. And we got to the northeast corner of the area.
You were on top of the rim?
Just about, yeah.
Holy buckets.
we come across a buck and like 9 does.
All right.
And he is 150 yards from the border.
All right.
And about 200 yards from us. So I whip it into the ditch. Tell my hunter, all right, get out, get it done right now. Well, apparently the right now didn't sink in because he real slow sneaks out of the back, out of the front seat, tries to get all set up on a fence post, and by this time they're running.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, get in the truck now. So I haul ass around the corner onto the other highway, try to cut him off. That didn't work.
You know, trying to cut him off with the truck's always tedious at best. Once they're moving like that, they know the jig is up.
And I know from experience, just life experience in general, not even hunting, an antelope will T-bone you.
They'll try and race you, yes.
No, they will flat out T-bone your vehicle.
Right.
I had one shove me into an opposite lane.
Oh, my gosh. That's pretty hard considering they weigh like 140 pounds.
Yeah, but they're also moving at 55 miles an hour.
This is true.
You know, there's this kinetic energy involved. So, missed those, and then we decided maybe it's lunchtime, because it was like 1 o'clock. And now I'm starting to sweat it, because we don't have anything down, and we have 2 to get. And we come across three of them, and we watch them, and they go up over the ridge. We're like, okay, there's a road right here. Let's go. We get up around the corner, around the ridge. We finally get in range of one. And he was nice. He wasn't super heavy, but he was really wide. He was unique.
I like him like that.
Yeah. So my hunter goes, all right, I'll do this. And he gets, you know, him and Jaden kind of work down, and me and the other hunter, we stay in the truck because I don't want a bunch of undue movement.
Smart.
So we peeled everybody off the opposite side of the truck and let them kind of sneak into position, and I stayed there on glass, and I was ranging for him, and he gets settled in, he takes the first shot, and he was a hair low. And this antelope's quartered to him. And it's the second time I've ever seen it. He hit just low enough that he split the skin.
Oh.
And everything fell out.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Do you know how easy it was to clean that animal?
Well, as long as it was just the skin.
Just the skin. I was impressed.
So he had to make another fatal shot.
Had to make another fatal shot, but it was a good shot. But I it's weird that it was a fatal shot because there was nothing left in the cavity. It was all on the ground.
Sometimes it works like that.
But yeah, that was the easiest time I think I've ever had field dressing an animal. So we got him. Got him in the truck, got pictures, everybody's high five, it's all good. And, you know, about that time it really started warming up. It was, you know, 70, 75, and it's like, okay, we need to get this guy in the cooler here quick. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we still got another goat to get. So let's cruise back, and we'll kind of take our time getting back and see if we don't see something else on the way. And never did see another one. All the way back to the fire hall.
Oh, my gosh.
So we drop him off, get him all hung and in the cooler and cooling down, and we go back out. And one of the other guides, he says, I got 20 of them on my pasture. He says, go up to my place. Okay. So we start heading that way, and we saw one, so we kind of peeled off. And we went to go see if we could get on him, and That didn't work. And I thought it was funny because my hunter said, he said, it started getting to be about 3:30 and it started getting real quiet in the truck. He says, there was little intensity.
Tick tock, y'all.
Yeah. And about that time, I get this text from Brandy. And she's like, how's it going? I text her back, and I went, standards are dropping rapidly.
Well, because at this point, him and Jaden and one other guide were the only ones out of 25 hunters that haven't returned.
Hey, right? I returned once. I got my hunter taken care of, so I'm putting this on Jaden.
Valid. All right. So
we finally... Like we're driving up, we're going up to this pasture, and we're probably 10 miles away from it. And we happen to see this buck standing, and he's 280 yards off the road, and he's just standing there. And he's looking right at us. But they peel out of the truck and go get set up, and I mean, I'm watching the clock, and this thing has stood stock still for 3 minutes at this point. And every once in a while, he'll flick his tail or he'll stomp his back foot. And I'm sitting there. I'm sweating bullets. I'm like, he's going to move. Shoot, 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 shoot. And me and my hunter are in the truck. We're having a freaking coronary. And these guys are down there, proned out on this rock, just having a conversation. And we're like, shoot him. Shoot him in the goat. He's going to run. Shoot him in the goat.
So you've had a day of them running away from you, and you're watching these guys just watch them.
Yeah.
Got it.
So, hunter takes the shot, 280 yards, and I watch it hit. And it could not have been a more perfect shot. I
exactly within a half inch of where you wanted it to be. And this coat takes about three steps and falls off the cliff into the creek.
Oh, no.
I'm going, oh, crap. The only saving grace is there was a two-track road that led right to him.
Oh, my gosh.
So we spool up in the truck, and I go haul ass on down on this road. We get to him, and what we couldn't see was that he went down, and he must have had enough gas left in him that he went across the creek and laid down on the other side of the creek.
All right.
Which I say creek at this point in time, it's a trickle.
Well, but there's wet in it.
It,
right?
It was a little wet, a little muddy. But we so I'm like, all right, let's drag him out of the weeds. Let's get him up here on the hill so he's kind of an incline, makes life easier. And we open this up, and I will tell you that a 7 PRC with a correct shot placement, there's no real cleaning involved. You cut them open and drain them.
Yeah, everything's kind of jello.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, that hydraulic shock of speed is very terminal.
Very. But that was, that shot was taken at about 3:58, and we had been joking all day about the 4 o'clock buck.
Oh, that's funny. You went from trophy to representation of the species.
No, he was actually, I mean, at the end of the day, he was nice. You know, everything that we look for, cutters above the ears, nice curl. He wasn't as tall as I would have liked him, but he was nice, and he was good, stout body. So, Hunter got a good amount of meat out of him.
So, drive him back to the fire hall to put him in the cooler. It went from a somber to a celebratory?
A little bit. I was so freaking exhausted at that point. Yes, I'm going to admit to this, but we were driving back to the fire hall. I was drinking a beer.
You weren't the only one.
And for those listening, when he says he was drinking a beer, he was on a two-track, which is not a roadway, so it's not necessarily that frowned upon.
No. No. But it was, there was, and I'm sure you've all experienced this, like it's that tension, stress, because you're trying to get something done, and you finally get it done, and then it's the,
Yeah, the relief. And then you want to go to sleep.
Yeah. Well, and it didn't help that, you know, I was operating on this hunt on like 4 hours of sleep in 2 days. So
now, one of your guys that were in your truck with you, he moved here from China.
No, that's not
he
him.
That wasn't you? That wasn't
no.
My hunter. I went and gave him, the day before I had given him a tutorial because he had never hunted, never shot a hunting rifle. And his guide was busy cooking dinner, so he had asked me to go and...
Oh, he was
and,
Oscar's guy.
Yeah, teach him to, you know, make sure he knew how to shoot. I sat him down at the bench and gave him, you know, a Cliff Notes version of here's how to shoot this kind of rifle.
Well, I was standing there watching that day. And
he sat down and put together a group of five on top of each other.
Yeah, he did really, really well. Now, what his story was kind of fascinating. He moved here from China, like 16, 17 years old.
Hmm?
And he enlisted after he naturalized as a citizen.
Right.
And so he served. He put time in. I mean, it was
pretty significant.
Impressive.
I think it was like 8 years.
Yeah. No, he put some time in. And to look at him, he looks like he's 18 years old. But
right.
The Chinese don't age anyway.
No, they don't.
But it was one of the first international naturalized citizens we'd had come through as a disabled vet.
Right.
And he was just happy to be there. You could have taken him, prairie dogs, and jackrabbits, and he'd have been happy.
Yeah.
But he got a good antelope with Oscar.
He did. And I received the photos before he showed up at the cooler. And his smile was so big, I didn't think it was possible that it stayed on his face. It was so huge, and he still had it on when he got clear back to the cooler.
Well, and I got a story about him, but let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Beans, bullets, Band-Aids, and booze. While everyone forgets about the last one, 10th Mountain has you covered. With a range of whiskey, vodka, and cordials, you're sure to find just the right spirit for your next adventure. Just remember to flip up your nods before you take a sip. Now shipping orders to nearly every US state so you can get in on the awesomeness. Enter Deer Shooter at checkout for 15% off your order. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company. Whiskey worth fighting for.
Are you fed up with paying premium prices for mediocre performance? It might be time to up your game with Lucid Optics. Lucid Optics delivers world record-setting performance without breaking the bank. From long-range precision, hunting application, and the first-ever reflex optic in blue, your mission won't be compromised. Lucid Optics are built tough as nails for the most demanding situations, using ED shot glass to ensure your view is crystal clear and backing it up with a lifetime warranty. To learn more, ask your dealer or go to lucidoptics.com. Lucid Optics. On target. Under budget.
As I'm sitting here trying to, you know, respect the on-air sign, I'm throwing gang signs to my dog, and he's looking at me like I'm on crack. But he did what I wanted him to do, so we're good.
Well, this is weird because he did understand you. It was funny.
So, our Chinese guy. When I got back, Oscar was telling me about all this, and so I went to go see him because I'm like, hey, I got kind of the first shots with this guy, and I walk up to him and I said, you know. I said, we went through all of this tutorial, and I taught you to shoot, and you put together the most amazing group, and then I hear about this, and he kind of looks at me all nervous. And I grabbed his hand. I'm like, congratulations, dude. That was a good shot.
I watched you do that to him, and I've seen a Chinese blush before, but he turned almost purple. That was funny.
But it... I think a lot of these guys, because my hunters told me, because we actually brought them back to our house, and the next day, you know, well, actually we stayed up to like 11 o'clock at night, and we got theirs all cut down and put in coolers and everything and frozen, and we, as we're sitting there talking, you know, they're like, oh man, we were so glad when you guys showed up and you were our guides, because we were so worried we were going to end up with some old curmudgeon.
So, no, like, but I purposely try to put, because I talk to all these guys first and I know my guides, so I try to put similar age groups together so they would have something to talk about. Because can you imagine me putting an 82-year-old guide with like a 28-year-old? It wouldn't work.
Yes, but you learned your lesson about putting a 90-year-old guy with an 85-year-old guy.
Hey, hold on a second. That 85-year-old guy couldn't hit the broadside of a barn at sight-in day. So I told his guide, Bob Britton, who's 90,
uh-huh.
I said, you're going to have to get him close. I mean, like, really close. And he goes, I'll run him over with the side-by-side. He can shoot him then. Well, not that close, Bob. They take off out of the fire hall, go to Bob's house. And Bob has been watching this goat out his bathroom window for a month.
Mm-hmm.
So he rolls in there and lets him sneak around the corner of their house. Shoots this goat at like 100 yards. Great shot. Good goat. I mean, it's pushing 82. I mean, it's a good goat.
I heard that was.
But after he puts said goat down, you know, it traveled a little. And so the hunter had COPD. So breathing is an issue. And we have him up several thousand feet from where he's from. And so he's like, I had to sit down and rest and catch my breath. And he goes, and then Bob fell down in the sagebrush. So I had to get up and help Bob out of the sagebrush. And then I had to sit down again to catch my breath.
I wish I'd have had video on that.
He said it took longer to get to the goat than it did to hunt the goat.
He was so happy, though.
Oh,
his wife was there with him, and she's like, I don't know what you did to him, but he hasn't smiled this much in 20 years.
And I think it's stuff like that that is the best part of what Vet Healing Adventures does. And this year, I think, was probably one of the best groups we've ever had.
It was. And these stories we've been telling, there's 25 of those to be told just from this year.
Yeah, we didn't get all the stories yet because, of course, we're all exhausted. We stay up late. I think, what was it, 11:30 at night on Saturday night before I bust all the tables so I'd be prepared for breakfast and getting up at 4 and 5 in the morning to make breakfast. We're all tired, but the next time we all get together, there's going to be a lot more stories. Oh, I want to say the one veteran that she impressed me the most.
Mm.
She was our only female vet. And she came back on Sunday morning, and she deboned not only her goat, but the Ray's goat as well. And she did everything, like between the ribs. I mean, these bones couldn't have been more white if you boiled the dang things.
Now, she's a Gold Star mom, too, or a Gold Star wife.
Gold Star wife, yes.
Yeah. Two children.
Right. And if I'm not mistaken, during this event, it was also her birthday.
The hunt day.
It was, yeah. Yes.
So, you know, one of the things I absolutely applaud the organization for is the care they take in the selection of the hunters. Everybody that I talked to that was there, this was their first antelope hunt. And a lot of them, this was their first hunt.
We do that on purpose. There is a crew out there that just goes from hunt to hunt to hunt. That's all they do. They take advantage of the system. Our guys, they are first timers. It's something unique. It's maybe even a bucket list item that they've been thinking about. They come to it with a fresh perspective, allows them to forget their daily grind a little bit, make a new friend or two or 20, maybe 100 new friends.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something they are going to remember in a positive way for the rest of their life.
Well, when we take these guys literally in the middle of nowhere, so if no one's ever been to Lysite, Wyoming, when I send that first email that says, bring everything you need, there are no services, there's no gas, no stores, there are no live businesses other than the fire hall in this town. And they all kind of laughed it off. Some of them got there and they went, wow. And then every year I get the comment about the flashing light before you go into Lysite.
Yeah.
The, you know, poisonous gas, if it's on, don't cross this sign or whatever, and they freak out about it.
That we used to have people stop at the sign and call and say, is it okay to come in?
Well, one of our guides, he's lived there his entire life, and he said 5 times in the 30 years he's been there has that thing gone off. And he goes, and it's not just the lights. So when you cross here, you know, it's not like you don't know.
And
there's so many sirens that go off, and they evacuate. And they get to come back home. It's all good.
Yep. I always laugh because every year, and this year was no exception, my hunters call me and they're, you know, oh, well, what kind of camo should I have? And do I need to bring my frame pack to pack out an animal? And I go, whoa, you know, slow down there, you know, Jim Bridger. This is going to be the most redneck hunt you've ever been on.
And it is. It is totally a redneck. I mean,
we just bomb down the dirt roads until we see something close, jump out and shoot it.
Well, and then I've had a lot of people say, well, what's the success rate? And I'm like, well, our antelope here, it's going to be kind of like Walmart. You're going to have to choose one.
In the years we've been doing it, we've never had a season where we had a vet that didn't tag out.
Mm-hmm.
Not yet. Knock on wood. Don't ruin us.
I know.
But this goes back to the beginning of the story here, because Jason was sweating bullets because he didn't want to be that guy, right? Nobody wants to be the guy that brings in the hunter that didn't tag.
Nope.
because it is. It's a food stamp. There is a ample amount of antelope in the area, and all you got to do is really kind of figure out what your tolerance is for trophy or not.
Well, and here, the other thing, too, and it was something I had never thought about before until this year, but it starts getting later in the afternoon, and all of a sudden, you're seeing groups of does with no buck, and your hunters are like, man, I don't see a buck in there, and it's like, well, they're used to could.
Yeah,
somebody already got him.
It is opening day for everybody.
Yeah.
And we have 25 hunters with our organization in that area.
Mm-hmm. We're not alone.
No.
There's a lot of
folks out. even just our organization, right? 25 hunters. You start running across a group of does and you're like, there was a buck with there in this morning. Yeah, well, he's in the cooler now.
That's right.
So
that's exactly right.
So you really start sweating it when now all of a sudden you're seeing groups of does with no buck. Oh, man.
And that's why we drive in trucks like we do, because you have to cover ground.
You got
to
cover a lot. And I covered a lot. I went through 3/4 of a tank of gas.
I knew several guys that came back to the firehouse saying that they put over 100 miles on their vehicle that day.
I bet I did more than that. I bet I did close to 2.
Okay.
Well, and it was difficult this year because they only, in that area, only buck tags. There are no doe tags. So everyone's looking for the buck.
Yep.
Nobody's looking for a doe.
I mean, I was first back to the cooler with my guy, and I put 97 miles on my vehicle.
Yeah.
And you didn't come back till like 9:30. What was it? Last year, I had one. They went out
like
at
17 minutes. They were back.
And they were back. And I'm like, well, now what are you going to do? Because Lysite is not a hopping town. Yeah,
I fully suspect Dave Ramage had that one tied up.
Right? To a post somewhere.
I did. I do remember asking Jaden at one point. I'm like, hey, did you tie those two up like I told you to?
He forgot.
No, he did. But
it's a good time. It's a great cause. And for me, it's watching those guys have the smile grow from Friday night to Saturday night. And it stays. You see them on Sunday morning, and they're still smiling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I like the fact that when they first come, they don't know anybody there unless their buddy. You know, I try to put buddies together or brothers together or whatever. But they don't know anybody. And by Sunday morning, they are all chatting like they've known each other forever.
Yep. And you know, throughout the years and stuff, our hunters, and even if they weren't our hunters, you know, we've had hunters that they stayed an extra day or whatever, and we ended up, you know, they're staying at our house, and it's, they become friends for life.
That's right.
You know, I still stay in touch with hunters that we've had come through that I didn't even guide.
Oh yeah. We make lifelong friends out of this deal.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's probably the best part, but wow. I had other stuff to talk about, but we're like way bumping over time.
Nah, it's good.
So
Vet Healing Adventures, guys, it's a good cause. Take it, check it out.
It is a good cause. And let me ask you this. Is your raffle online?
I will get it there. We will put information out on social media as well.
Okay.
If you go to the website and you want to buy a raffle ticket for the all-inclusive safari that we're running this year,
yep,
it's a $50 ticket. If you donate the $50 through the program and you write in the comment section for a raffle ticket, we'll get your name put on one. It's no problem.
Perfect. And it's cool. Give us a quick rundown on what the raffle is, what the safari actually is.
And the website.
Yep.
Sure. So vethealingadventures.org, because we're a nonprofit. So raffle this year is a South African safari. You're going to go with Terra Wildlife, who's in the Free State down in Victoriaburg, which is 2 hours south of Johannesburg. And what they've offered up to us this year is an all-inclusive, except for airfare, right? You get there, and they're going to take you from the airport. They're going to feed you. They're going to house you. They're going to put you on a red hartebeest, a gemsbuck, and a black wildebeest.
Nice.
That's all paid for.
For $50.
Correct.
If you win.
If you win.
Got to win it. But they'll take you back to the airport, and you'll have to choose your taxidermy and decide what kind of gratuity you want to leave. But In the grand scheme of all-inclusive, it's about a $9,000 trip.
Right.
Outside airfare. So for a $50 win, it's a hell of a deal.
Yeah.
And I mean, gratuity's not crazy over there because of the exchange rate. We're having stuff taxidermied over there. I have seven animals over there, and it's really not that bad.
It's about half price of what we see taxidermy in the U.S.
I'd say closer to a third.
But it's the shipping back that'll get you.
I mean, there is that. By the time you ship it back, you're about two thirds what it would cost you to get it done here.
You've got two years to figure out your dates to go.
Okay.
And once you knock them down and you get into taxidermy, you've got a year and a half to figure out how to get that home.
Right.
So it's not like you got to do it all at once.
Right. Yeah. And I will tell you, like, for the longest time, Africa, I thought, was way, 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 way out of my reach, out of my budget. And once I finally pulled the trigger and did it, it's really not. And especially with Terra, because they are all inclusive. They're not one of these places that you're going to get there and they're going to nickel and dime you to death while you're on the ground.
Oh, yeah. And this trip includes an observer, by the way.
Yes.
So take somebody with you. They'll watch and have out and hang out and have a good time. If you decide to do something else while you're there, that'll be market price.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, again, it's a memory and experience you can't replace. I've been twice, and I'm jonesing to go back.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Brandy and I are going to go back next year. I think that's the plan.
I'm trying to go with you.
Well, until next week, here's your chance. Go support an amazing cause and potentially get a really amazing trip out of it. But until next week, you know what? You guys just keep blaming your gun.